Chapter 7. The Boggart in the Wardrobe. Malfoy didn't reappear in classes until late on Thursday morning, when the Slytherins and Gryffindors were halfway through double potions. He swaggered into the dungeon, his right arm covered in bandages and bound up in a sling, acting, in Harry's opinion, as though he was the heroic survivor of some dreadful battle.
"How is it, Draco?" simpered Pansy Parkinson. "Does it hurt much?"
"Yeah," said Malfoy, putting on a brave sort of grimace. But Harry saw him wink at Crabbe and Goyle when Pansy had looked away. "Settle down, settle down," said Professor Snape, idly. Harry and Ron scowled at each other. Snape wouldn't have said, "settle down," if they'd walked in late. He'd have given them detention. But Malfoy had always been able to get away with anything in Snape's classes. Snape was head of Slytherin House, and generally favoured his own students before all others. They were making a new potion today, a shrinking solution. Malfoy set up his cauldron right next to Harry and Ron, so that they were preparing their ingredients on the same table.
"Sir," Malfoy called, "sir, I'll need help cutting up these daisy roots because of my arm."
"Weasley, cut up Malfoy's roots for him," said Snape, without looking up.
Ron went brick red.
"There's nothing wrong with your arm," he hissed at Malfoy.
Malfoy smirked across the table. "Weasley, you heard Professor Snape cut up these roots." Ron seized his knife, pulled Malfoy's roots towards him, and began to chop them roughly so that they were all different sizes.
"Professor," drawled Malfoy, "Weasley's mutilating my roots, sir."
Snape approached their table, stared down his hooked nose at the roots, then gave Ron an unpleasant smile from beneath his long, greasy black hair.
"Change roots with Malfoy, Weasley."
"But, sir—"
Ron had spent the last quarter of an hour carefully shredding his own roots into exactly equal pieces.
"Now!"
said Snape, in his most dangerous voice. Ron shoved his own beautifully cut roots across the table at Malfoy, then took up the knife again.
"And, sir, I'll need this shrivel fig skinned," said Malfoy, his face full of malicious laughter.
"Potter, you can skin Malfoy's shrivel fig," said Snape, giving Harry the look of loathing he always reserved just for him.
Harry took Malfoy's shrivel fig as Ron set about trying to repair the damage to the roots he now had to use. Harry skinned the shrivel fig as fast as he could and flung it back across the table at Malfoy without speaking. Malfoy was smirking more broadly than ever.
"Seen your pal Hagrid lately?" he asked them quietly.
"None of your business," said Ron jerkily, without looking up.
"I'm afraid he won't be a teacher much longer," said Malfoy in a tone of mock sorrow. "Father's not very happy about my injury."
"Keep talking, Malfoy, and I'll give you a real injury," snarled Ron.
"He's complained to the school governors and to the Ministry of Magic. Father's got a lot of influence, you know, and a lasting injury like this."
He gave a huge fake sigh.
"Who knows if my arm'll ever be the same again?"
"So that's why you're putting it on," said Harry, accidentally beheading a dead caterpillar because his hand was shaking in anger, "to try and get Hagrid sacked."
"Well," said Malfoy, lowering his voice to a whisper, "partly, Potter, but there are other benefits too. Weasley, slice my caterpillars for me."
A few cauldrons away, Neville was in trouble. Neville regularly went to pieces in potions lessons. It was his worst subject, and his great fear of Professor Snape made things 10 times worse. His potion, which was supposed to be a bright, acid green, had turned...
"Orange, Longbottom?"
said Snape, ladling some up and allowing it to splash back into the cauldron so that everyone could see.
"Orange. Tell me, boy, does anything penetrate that thick skull of yours?"
Didn't you hear me say quite clearly that only one rat spleen was needed? Didn't I state plainly that a dash of leech juice would suffice? What do I have to do to make you understand, Longbottom?" Neville was pink and trembling. He looked as though he was on the verge of tears.
"Please, sir," said Hermione, "please, I could help Neville put it right."
"I don't remember asking you to show off, Miss Granger," said Snape coldly, and Hermione went as pink as Neville. "Longbottom, at the end of this lesson, we will feed a few drops of this potion to your toad and see what happens. Perhaps that will encourage you to do it properly." Snape moved away, leaving Neville breathless with fear.
"Help me," he moaned to Hermione.
"Hey, Harry," said Seamus Finnegan, leaning over to borrow Harry's brass scales.
"Have you heard? Daily Prophet this morning. They reckon Sirius Black's been sighted."
"Where?" said Harry and Ron quickly. On the other side of the table, Malfoy looked up, listening closely.
"Not too far from here," said Seamus, who looked excited. "It was a muggle who saw him. Of course, she didn't really understand. The muggles think he's just an ordinary criminal, don't they? So she phoned the telephone hotline. By the time the Ministry of Magic got there, he was gone."
"Not too far from here," Ron repeated, looking significantly at Harry. He turned around and saw Malfoy watching closely.
"What, Malfoy? Need something else skinning?"
But Malfoy's eyes were shining malevolently, and they were fixed on Harry. He leaned across the table.
"Thinking of trying to catch Black single-handed, Potter?"
"Yeah, that's right," said Harry, offhandedly.
Malfoy's thin mouth was curving in a mean smile. "Of course, if it was me," he said quietly, "I'd have done something before now. I wouldn't be staying in school like a good boy. I'd be out there looking for him."
"What are you talking about, Malfoy?" said Ron roughly.
"Don't you know, Potter?" breathed Malfoy, his pale eyes narrowed.
"Know what?"
Malfoy let out a low, sneering laugh.
"Maybe you'd rather not risk your neck," he said. "Want to leave it to the Dementors, do you? But if it was me, I'd want revenge. I'd hunt him down myself."
"What are you talking about?" said Harry angrily. But at that moment Snape called,
"You should have finished adding your ingredients by now. This potion needs to stew before it can be drunk. Clear away while it simmers, and then we'll test Longbottom's."
Crabbe and Goyle laughed openly, watching Neville sweat as he stirred his potion feverishly. Hermione was muttering instructions to him out of the corner of her mouth so that Snape wouldn't see. Harry and Ron packed away their unused ingredients and went to wash their hands and ladles in the stone basin in the corner.
"What did Malfoy mean?"
Harry muttered to Ron as he stuck his hands under the icy jet that poured from a gargoyle's mouth.
"Why would I want revenge on Black? He hasn't done anything to me. Yet."
"He's making it up," said Ron savagely. "He's trying to make you do something stupid."
The end of the lesson in sight, Snape strode over to Neville, who was cowering by his cauldron.
"Everyone gather round," said Snape, his black eyes glittering, "and watch what happens to Longbottom's toad. If he has managed to produce a shrinking solution, it will shrink to a tadpole. If, as I don't doubt, he has done it wrong, his toad is likely to be poisoned."
The Gryffindors watched fearfully. The Slytherins looked excited. Snape picked up Trevor the Toad in his left hand and dipped a small spoon into Neville's potion, which was now green. He trickled a few drops down Trevor's throat. There was a moment of hushed silence, in which Trevor gulped. Then there was a small pop, and Trevor the Tadpole was wriggling in Snape's palm. The Gryffindors burst into applause. Snape, looking sour, pulled a small bottle from the pocket of his robe, poured a few drops on top of Trevor, and he reappeared suddenly, fully grown.
5 points from Gryffindor," said Snape, which wiped the smiles from every face. "I told you not to help him, Miss Granger."
Class dismissed.
Harry, Ron and Hermione climbed the steps to the entrance hall. Harry was still thinking about what Malfoy had said, while Ron was seething about Snape. 5 points from Gryffindor because the potion was all right. Why didn't you lie, Hermione? You should have said Neville did it all by himself. Hermione didn't answer. Ron looked around. Where is she? Harry turned too. They were at the top of the steps now, watching the rest of the class pass them, heading for the great hall and lunch.
She was right behind us, said Ron, frowning.
Malfoy passed them, walking between Crabbe and Goyle. He smirked at Harry and disappeared.
There she is, said Harry.
Hermione was panting slightly, hurrying up the stairs. One hand was clutching her bag, the other seemed to be tucking something down the front of her robes.
"How did you do that?" said Ron.
"What?" said Hermione, joining them.
"One minute you were right behind us, and next moment you were back at the bottom of the stairs again."
"What?" Hermione looked slightly confused.
"Oh, I had to go back for something. Oh, no!"
A seam had split on Hermione's bag. Harry wasn't surprised. He could see that it was crammed with at least a dozen large and heavy books.
"Why are you carrying all these around with you?"
Ron asked her.
"You know how many subjects I'm taking," said Hermione breathlessly. "Couldn't hold these for me, could you?"
But Ron was turning over the books she had handed him, looking at the covers.
"You haven't got any of these subjects today. It's only Defence Against the Dark Arts this afternoon."
"Oh, yes," said Hermione vaguely, but she packed all the books back into her bag just the same.
"I hope there's something good for lunch. I'm starving," she added.
And she marched off towards the great hall.
"Do you get the feeling Hermione's not telling us something?" Ron asked Harry.
Professor Lupin wasn't there when they arrived at his first Defence Against the Dark Arts lesson. They all sat down, took out their books, quills and parchment, and were talking when he finally entered the room. Lupin smiled vaguely and placed his tatty old briefcase on the teacher's desk. He was as shabby as ever, but looked healthier than he had on the train, as though he had had a few square meals.
"Good afternoon," he said. "Would you please put all your books back in your bags? Today's will be a practical lesson. You will only need your wands."
A few curious looks were exchanged as the class put away their books. They had never had a practical Defence Against the Dark Arts before, unless you counted the memorable class last year when their old teacher had brought a cage full of pixies to class and set them loose.
"Right then," said Professor Lupin when everyone was ready, "if you'd follow me."
Puzzled but interested, the class got to its feet and followed Professor Lupin out of the classroom. He led them along the deserted corridor and around a corner, where the first thing they saw was Peeves the Poltergeist, who was floating upside down in mid-air and stuffing the nearest keyhole with chewing gum. Peeves didn't look up until Professor Lupin was 2 feet away. Then he wiggled his curly-toed feet and broke into song.
"Loony loopy loopin," Peeves sang. "Loony loopy loopin, loony loopy loopin."
Rude and unmanageable as he almost always was, Peeves usually showed some respect towards the teachers. Everyone looked quickly at Professor Lupin to see how he would take this. To their surprise, he was still smiling.
"I'd take that gum out of the keyhole if I were you, Peeves," he said pleasantly. "Mr. Filch won't be able to get into his brooms."
Filch was the Hogwarts caretaker, a bad-tempered, failed wizard who waged a constant war against the students, and indeed Peeves. However, Peeves paid no attention to Professor Lupin's words, except to blow a loud, wet raspberry. Professor Lupin gave a small sigh and took out his wand.
"This is a useful little spell," he told the class over his shoulder. "Please watch closely."
He raised the wand to shoulder height, said, "Waddy wazzy," and pointed it at Peeves. With the force of a bullet, the wad of chewing gum shot out of the keyhole and straight down Peeves's left nostril. He whirled right way up and zoomed away, cursing.
cool, sir," said Dean Thomas in amazement.
"Thank you, Dean," said Professor Lupin, putting his wand away again. "Shall we proceed?"
They set off again, the class looking at shabby Professor Lupin with increased respect. He led them down a second corridor and stopped, right outside the staff room door.
"Inside, please," said Professor Lupin,
opening it and standing back. The staff room, a long, panelled room full of old, mismatched chairs, was empty except for one teacher. Professor Snape was sitting in a low armchair, and he looked around as the class filed in. His eyes were glittering, and there was a nasty sneer playing around his mouth. As Professor Lupin came in and made to close the door behind him, Snape said,
"Leave it open, Lupin. I'd rather not witness this."
He got to his feet and strode past the class, his black robes billowing behind him. At the doorway, he turned on his heel and said,
"Possibly no one's warned you, Lupin, but this class contains Neville Longbottom. I would advise you not to entrust him with anything difficult, not unless Miss Granger is hissing instructions in his ear."
Neville went scarlet. Harry glared at Snape. It was bad enough that he bullied Neville in his own classes, let alone doing it in front of other teachers. Professor Lupin had raised his eyebrows.
"I was hoping that Neville would assist me with the first stage of the operation," he said, "and I am sure he will perform it admirably."
Neville's face went, if possible, even redder. Snape's lip curled, but he left, shutting the door with a snap.
"Now then,"
said Professor Lupin, beckoning the class towards the end of the room, where there was nothing except an old wardrobe in which the teachers kept their spare robes. As Professor Lupin went to stand next to it, the wardrobe gave a sudden wobble, banging off the wall.
"Nothing to worry about," said Professor Lupin calmly, as a few people jumped backwards in alarm. "There's a boggart in there."
Most people seemed to feel that this was something to worry about. Neville gave Professor Lupin a look of pure terror, and Seamus Finnegan eyed the now rattling doorknob apprehensively.
"Boggarts like dark, enclosed spaces," said Professor Lupin. "Wardrobes, the gap beneath beds, the cupboards under sinks. I once met one that had lodged itself in a grandfather clock. This one moved in yesterday afternoon, and I asked the headmaster if the staff would leave it to give my third year some practice. So, the first question we must ask ourselves is, what is a boggart?"
Hermione put up her hand. "It's a shapeshifter," she said. "It can take the shape of whatever it thinks will frighten us most."
"Couldn't have put it better myself," said Professor Lupin, and Hermione glowed. "So the boggart sitting in the darkness within has not yet assumed a form. He does not yet know what will frighten the person on the other side of the door. Nobody knows what a boggart looks like when he is alone. But when I let him out, he will immediately become whatever each of us most fears." "This means," said Professor Lupin, choosing to ignore Neville's small splatter of terror, "that we have a huge advantage over the boggart before we begin. Have you spotted it, Harry?"
Trying to answer a question with Hermione next to him, bobbing up and down on the balls of her feet with her hand in the air, was very off-putting, but Harry had a go.
Because there are so many of us, it won't know what shape it should be."
"Precisely," said Professor Lupin, and Hermione put her hand down, looking a little disappointed.
"It's always best to have company when you're dealing with a boggart. He becomes confused. Which should he become? A headless corpse or a flesh-eating slug? I once saw a boggart make that very mistake, tried to frighten two people at once, and turned himself into half a slug, not remotely frightening. The charm that repels a boggart is simple, yet it requires force of mind. You see, the thing that really finishes a boggart is laughter. What you need to do is force it to assume a shape that you find amusing."
"We will practice the charm without wands first. After me, please.
Ridiculous!
Ridiculous! Said the class together.
Good, said Professor Lupin. Very good. But that was the easy part, I'm afraid. You see, the word alone is not enough. And this is where you come in, Neville.
The wardrobe shook again, though not as much as Neville, who walked forward as though he was heading for the gallows.
Right, Neville, said Professor Lupin. First things first. What would you say is the thing that frightens you most in the world?
Neville's lips moved, but no noise came out.
Didn't catch that, Neville, sorry, said Professor Lupin cheerfully.
Neville looked around rather wildly, as though begging someone to help him, then said, in barely more than a whisper,
Professor Snape.
Nearly everyone laughed. Even Neville grinned apologetically. Professor Lupin, however, looked thoughtful.
Professor Snape? Neville, I believe you live with your grandmother.
Yes, said Neville nervously, but I don't want the boggart to turn into her either.
No, no, you misunderstand me, said Professor Lupin, now smiling. I wonder, could you tell us what sort of clothes your grandmother usually wears?
Neville looked startled, but said,
Well, always the same hat, a tall one with a stuffed vulture on top, and a long dress, green normally, and sometimes a fox fur scarf.
And a handbag? Prompted Professor Lupin.
A big red one, said Neville.
Right then, said Professor Lupin. Can you picture those clothes very clearly, Neville? Can you see them in your mind's eye?
Yes, said Neville uncertainly, plainly wondering what was coming next.
When the boggart bursts out of this wardrobe, Neville, and sees you, it will assume the form of Professor Snape, said Lupin, and you will raise your wand, thus, and cry, Ridiculous! And concentrate hard on your grandmother's clothes. If all goes well, Professor Boggart Snape will be forced into that vulture-topped hat, that green dress, that big red handbag.
There was a great shout of laughter. The wardrobe wobbled more violently.
If Neville is successful, the boggart is likely to turn his attention to each of us in turn, said Professor Lupin. I would like all of you to take a moment now to think of the thing that scares you most and imagine how you might force it to look comical.
The room went quiet. Harry thought, what scared him most in the world? His first thought was Lord Voldemort. A Voldemort returned to full strength. But before he had even started to plan a possible counter-attack on a boggart Voldemort, a horrible image came floating to the surface of his mind. A rotting, glistening hand slithering back beneath a black cloak. A long, rattling breath from an unseen mouth. Then a cold so penetrating it felt like drowning. Harry shivered, then looked around, hoping no one had noticed. Many people had their eyes shut tight. Ron was muttering to himself, "Take its legs off." Harry was sure he knew what that was about. Ron's greatest fear was spiders.
"Everyone ready?" said Professor Lupin.
Harry felt a lurch of fear. He wasn't ready. How could you make a Dementor less frightening? But he didn't want to ask for more time. Everyone else was nodding and rolling up their sleeves.
Neville, we're going to back away, said Professor Lupin. Let you have a clear field, all right? I'll call the next person forward. Everyone back now, so Neville can get a clear shot.
They all retreated, backing against the walls, leaving Neville alone beside the wardrobe. He looked pale and frightened, but he had pushed up the sleeves of his robes and was holding his wand ready.
"On the count of three, Neville," said Professor Lupin,
who was pointing his own wand at the handle of the wardrobe.
"One, two, three, now!"
A jet of sparks shot from the end of Professor Lupin's wand and hit the doorknob. The wardrobe burst open. Hook-nosed and menacing, Professor Snape stepped out, his eyes flashing at Neville. Neville backed away, his wand up, mouthing wordlessly. Snape was bearing down upon him, reaching inside his robes.
Ridiculous!
Squeaked Neville. There was a noise like a whip crack. Snape stumbled. He was wearing a long, lace-trimmed dress and a towering hat topped with a moth-eaten vulture and swinging a huge crimson handbag from his hand. There was a roar of laughter. The boggart paused, confused, and Professor Lupin shouted, "Parvati, forward!" Parvati walked forward, her face set. Snape rounded on her. There was another crack, and where he had stood was a blood-stained, bandaged mummy. Its sightless face was turned to Parvati, and it began to walk towards her, very slowly, dragging its feet, its stiff arms rising.
"Ridiculous!" cried Parvati.
A bandage unravelled at the mummy's feet. It became entangled, fell face forwards, and its head rolled off.
"Seamus!"
roared Professor Lupin. Seamus darted past Parvati. Crack! Where the mummy had been was a woman with floor-length black hair and a skeletal green-tinged face, a banshee. She opened her mouth wide, and an unearthly sound filled the room, a long, wailing shriek which made the hair on Harry's head stand on end.
"Ridiculous!"
shouted Seamus. The banshee made a rasping noise and clutched her throat. Her voice was gone. Crack! The banshee turned into a rat, which chased its tail in a circle. Then, crack! Became a rattlesnake, which slithered and writhed before, crack! Becoming a single bloody eyeball.
"It's confused!" shouted Lupin. "We're getting there! Dean!"
Dean hurried forward. Crack! The eyeball became a severed hand, which flipped over and began to creep along the floor like a crab.
"Ridiculous!"
yelled Dean. There was a snap, and the hand was trapped in a mousetrap.
"Excellent! Ron, you next!"
Ron leapt forward.
Crack!
Quite a few people screamed. A giant spider, 6 feet tall and covered in hair, was advancing on Ron, clicking its pincers menacingly. For a moment, Harry thought Ron had frozen. Then,
"Ridiculous!"
bellowed Ron, and the spider's legs vanished. It rolled over and over. Lavender Brown squealed and ran out of its way, and it came to a halt at Harry's feet. He raised his wand ready, but,
"Here!"
shouted Professor Lupin suddenly, hurrying forward. Crack! The legless spider had vanished. For a second, everyone looked wildly around to see where it was. Then they saw a silvery-white orb hanging in the air in front of Lupin, who said,
"Ridiculous!"
almost lazily.
Crack!
"Forward, Neville, and finish him off," said Lupin, as the boggart landed on the floor as a cockroach. Crack! Snape was back. This time Neville charged forward, looking determined.
"Ridiculous!"
he shouted, and they had a split second's view of Snape in his lacy dress before Neville let out a great ha of laughter, and the boggart exploded, burst into a thousand tiny wisps of smoke, and was gone.
"Excellent!"
cried Professor Lupin, as the class broke into applause.
"Excellent, Neville! Well done, everyone! Let me see, 5 points to Gryffindor for every person to tackle the boggart, 10 for Neville because he did it twice, and 5 each to Hermione and Harry."
"But I didn't do anything," said Harry.
"You and Hermione answered my questions correctly at the start of the class, Harry," Lupin said lightly. "Very well, everyone. An excellent lesson. Homework, kindly read the chapter on boggarts and summarise it for me to be handed in on Monday. That will be all."
Talking excitedly, the class left the staff room. Harry, however, wasn't feeling cheerful. Professor Lupin had deliberately stopped him tackling the boggart. Why? Was it because he had seen Harry collapse on the train and thought he wasn't up to much? Had he thought Harry would pass out again? But no one else seemed to have noticed anything.
"Did you see me take that banshee?" shouted Seamus. "And the hand," said Dean, waving his own around. "And Snape in that hat!
and my mummy!
I wonder why Professor Lupin's frightened of crystal balls, said Lavender thoughtfully.
That was the best defence against the dark arts lesson we've ever had, wasn't it? Said Ron excitedly, as they made their way back to the classroom to get their bags.
He seems a very good teacher, said Hermione approvingly. But I wish I could have had a turn with the boggart.
What would it have been for you, said Ron, sniggering, a piece of homework that only got 9 out of 10?
Chapter 8 Flight of the Fat Lady. In no time at all, defence against the dark arts had become most people's favourite class. Only Draco Malfoy and his gang of Slytherins had anything bad to say about Professor Lupin. "Look at the state of his robes," Malfoy would say in a loud whisper as Professor Lupin passed. "He dresses like our old house elf." But no one else cared that Professor Lupin's robes were patched and frayed. His next few lessons were just as interesting as the first. After boggarts, they studied redcaps, nasty little goblin-like creatures that lurked wherever there had been bloodshed, in the dungeons of castles and the potholes of deserted battlefields, waiting to bludgeon those who had got lost. From redcaps, they moved on to cappers, creepy water-dwellers that looked like scaly monkeys with webbed hands itching to strangle unwitting waders in their ponds. Harry only wished he was as happy with some of his other classes. Worst of all was potions. Snape was in a particularly vindictive mood these days, and no one was in any doubt why. The story of the boggart assuming Snape's shape and the way that Neville had dressed it in his grandmother's clothes had travelled through the school like wildfire. Snape didn't seem to find it funny. His eyes flashed menacingly at the very mention of Professor Lupin's name, and he was bullying Neville worse than ever. Harry was also growing to dread the hours he spent in Professor Trelawney's stifling tower room, deciphering lopsided shapes and symbols, trying to ignore the way Professor Trelawney's enormous eyes filled with tears every time she looked at him. He couldn't like Professor Trelawney, even though she was treated with respect bordering on reverence by many of the class. Parvati Patil and Lavender Brown had taken to haunting Professor Trelawney's tower room at lunchtimes and always returned with annoyingly superior looks on their faces, as though they knew things the others didn't. They had also started using hushed voices whenever they spoke to Harry, as though he was on his deathbed. Nobody really liked Care of Magical Creatures, which, after the action-packed first class, had become extremely dull. Hagrid seemed to have lost his confidence. They were now spending lesson after lesson learning how to look after flobberworms, which had to be some of the most boring creatures in existence. "Why would anyone bother looking after them?" said Ron, after yet another hour of poking shredded lettuce down the flobberworms' slimy throats. At the start of October, however, Harry had something else to occupy him, something so enjoyable it made up for his unsatisfactory classes. The Quidditch season was approaching, and Oliver Wood, captain of the Gryffindor team, called a meeting one Thursday evening to discuss tactics for the new season. There were 7 people on a Quidditch team, 3 chasers, whose job it was to score goals by putting the quaffle, a red football-sized ball, through one of the 50-foot-high hoops at each end of the pitch. 2 beaters, who were equipped with heavy bats to repel the bludgers, 2 heavy black balls which zoomed around trying to attack the players, a keeper who defended the goalposts, and the seeker, who had the hardest job of all, that of catching the golden snitch, a tiny, winged, walnut-sized ball whose capture ended the game and earned the Seeker's team an extra 150 points. Oliver Wood was a burly 17-year-old, now in his 7th and final year at Hogwarts. There was a quiet sort of desperation in his voice as he addressed his 6 fellow team members in the chilly changing rooms on the edge of the darkening Quidditch pitch. "This is our last chance.
"My last chance to win the Quidditch Cup," he told them, striding up and down in front of them. "I'll be leaving at the end of this year. I'll never get another shot at it. Gryffindor haven't won for 7 years now. Okay, so we've had the worst luck in the world. Injuries, then the tournament getting called off last year." Wood swallowed, as though the memory still brought a lump to his throat. "But we also know we've got the best ruddy team in the school," he said, punching a fist into his other hand, the old manic glint back in his eye. "We've got 3 superb chasers." Wood pointed at Alicia Spinett, Angelina Johnson, and Katie Bell. "We've got 2 unbeatable beaters." "Stop it, Oliver, you're embarrassing us," said Fred and George Weasley together, pretending to blush. "And we've got a seeker who has never failed to win us a match," Wood rumbled, glaring at Harry with a kind of furious pride. "And me," he added, as an afterthought. "We think you're very good too, Oliver," said George. "Cracking keeper," said Fred. "The point is," Wood went on, resuming his pacing, "the Quidditch Cup should have had our name on it these last 2 years. Ever since Harry joined the team, I've thought the thing was in the bag. But we haven't got it. And this year's the last chance we'll get to finally see our name on the thing." Wood spoke so dejectedly that even Fred and George looked sympathetic. "Oliver, this year's our year," said Fred.
"We'll do it, Oliver," said Angelina.
"Definitely," said Harry. Full of determination, the team started training sessions 3 evenings a week. The weather was getting colder and wetter, the nights darker, but no amount of mud, wind, or rain could tarnish Harry's wonderful vision of finally winning the huge silver Quidditch Cup. Harry returned to the Gryffindor common room one evening after training, cold and stiff, but pleased with the way practice had gone, to find the room buzzing excitedly. "What's happened?" he asked Ron and Hermione, who were sitting in 2 of the best chairs by the fireside and completing some star charts for astronomy. "First Hogsmeade weekend," said Ron, pointing at a notice that had appeared on the battered old notice board. "End of October, Halloween." "Excellent," said Fred, who had followed Harry through the portrait hole. "I need to visit Zonko's. I'm nearly out of stink pellets." Harry threw himself into a chair beside Ron, his high spirits ebbing away. Hermione seemed to read his mind. "Harry, I'm sure you'll be able to go next time," she said. "They're bound to catch Black soon. He's been sighted once already."
"Black's not fool enough to try anything in Hogsmeade," said Ron.
"Ask McGonagall if you can go this time, Harry. The next one might not be for ages."
"Ron," said Hermione, "Harry's supposed to stay in school."
"He can't be the only 3rd year left behind," said Ron.
"Ask McGonagall. Go on, Harry."
"Yeah, I think I will," said Harry, making up his mind.
Hermione opened her mouth to argue, but at that moment Crookshanks leapt lightly onto her lap. A large dead spider was dangling from his mouth.
"Does he have to eat that in front of us?" said Ron, scowling.
"Clever Crookshanks! Did you catch that all by yourself?" said Hermione.
Crookshanks slowly chewed up the spider, his yellow eyes fixed insolently on Ron.
"Just keep him over there, that's all," said Ron, irritably, turning back to his star chart. "I've got Scabbers asleep in my bag."
Harry yawned. He really wanted to go to bed, but he still had his own star chart to complete. He pulled his bag towards him, took out parchment, ink, and quill, and started work.
"You can copy mine if you like," said Ron, labelling his last star with a flourish and shoving the chart towards Harry. Hermione, who disapproved of copying, pursed her lips but didn't say anything.
Crookshanks was still staring unblinkingly at Ron, flicking the end of his bushy tail. Then, without warning, he pounced.
"Oi!" Ron roared, seizing his bag, as Crookshanks sank 4 sets of claws deeply into it and began tearing ferociously. "Get off, you stupid animal!"
Ron tried to pull the bag away from Crookshanks, but Crookshanks clung on, spitting and slashing.
"Ron, don't hurt him!" squealed Hermione.
The whole common room was watching.
Ron whirled the bag around, Crookshanks still clinging to it, and Scabbers came flying out of the top.
"Catch that cat!"
Ron yelled as Crookshanks freed himself from the remnants of the bag, sprang over the table, and chased after the terrified Scabbers. George Weasley made a lunge for Crookshanks, but missed. Scabbers streaked through 20 pairs of legs and shot beneath an old chest of drawers. Crookshanks skidded to a halt, crouched low on his bandy legs, and started making furious swipes beneath the chest of drawers with his front paw. Ron and Hermione hurried over. Hermione grabbed Crookshanks around the middle and heaved him away. Ron threw himself onto his stomach and with great difficulty pulled Scabbers out by the tail.
"Look at him!"
he said furiously to Hermione, dangling Scabbers in front of her.
"He's skin and bone! You keep that cat away from him!"
"Crookshanks doesn't understand it's wrong," said Hermione, her voice shaking. "All cats chase rats, Ron!"
"There's something funny about that animal," said Ron, who was trying to persuade a frantically wiggling Scabbers back into his pocket. "It heard me say that Scabbers was in my bag."
"Oh, what rubbish!" said Hermione impatiently. "Crookshanks could smell him, Ron. How else do you think—"
"That cat's got it in for Scabbers," said Ron, ignoring the people around him who were starting to giggle. "And Scabbers was here first, and he's ill." Ron marched through the common room and out of sight up the stairs to the boys' dormitories. Ron was still in a bad mood with Hermione next day. He barely talked to her all through Herbology, even though he, Harry and Hermione were working together on the same puffer pod.
"How's Scabbers?" Hermione asked timidly as they stripped fat pink pods from the plants and emptied the shining beans into a wooden pail.
"He's hiding at the bottom of my bed, shaking," said Ron angrily, missing the pail and scattering beans over the greenhouse floor.
"Careful, Weasley, careful!" cried Professor Sprout as the beans burst into bloom before their very eyes.
They had transfiguration next. Harry, who had resolved to ask Professor McGonagall after the lesson whether he could go into Hogsmeade with the rest, joined the queue outside the classroom, trying to decide how he was going to argue his case. He was distracted, however, by a disturbance at the front of the line. Lavender Brown seemed to be crying. Parvati had her arm around her and was explaining something to Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, who were looking very serious.
"What's the matter, Lavender?"
said Hermione anxiously, as she, Harry and Ron went to join the group.
"She got a letter from home this morning," Parvati whispered. "It's her rabbit, Binky. He's been killed by a fox."
"Oh," said Hermione. "I'm sorry, Lavender."
"I should have known," said Lavender tragically. "You know what day it is?"
"The 16th of October. That thing you're dreading, it will happen on the 16th of October, remember?"
"She was right. She was right."
The whole class was gathered around Lavender now. Seamus shook his head seriously. Hermione hesitated. Then she said,
You were dreading Binky being killed by a fox?"
"Well, not necessarily by a fox," said Lavender,
looking up at Hermione with streaming eyes.
"But I was obviously dreading him dying, wasn't I?"
"Oh,"
said Hermione. She paused again, then, "Was Binky an old rabbit?"
No,
sobbed Lavender.
He was only a baby."
Parvati tightened her arm around Lavender's shoulders.
"But then, why would you dread him dying?"
said Hermione. Parvati glared at her.
"Well, look at it logically," said Hermione, turning to the rest of the group. "I mean, Binky didn't even die today, did he? Lavender just got the news today."
Lavender wailed loudly.
"And she can't have been dreading it, because it's come as a real shock."
"Don't mind Hermione, Lavender," said Ron loudly. "She doesn't think other people's pets matter very much." Professor McGonagall opened the classroom door at that moment, which was perhaps lucky. Hermione and Ron were looking daggers at each other, and when they got into class they seated themselves either side of Harry and didn't talk to each other all lesson.
Harry still hadn't decided what he was going to say to Professor McGonagall when the bell rang at the end of the lesson, but it was she who brought up the subject of Hogsmeade first.
"One moment, please," she called as the class made to leave. "As you're all in my house, you should hand Hogsmeade permission forms to me before Halloween. No form, no visiting the village, so don't forget."
Neville put up his hand.
"Please, Professor, I think I've lost—" "Your grandmother sent yours to me directly, Longbottom," said Professor McGonagall. "She seemed to think it was safer. Well, that's all. You may leave."
"Ask her now,"
Ron hissed at Harry.
"Oh, but—"
Hermione began.
"Go for it, Harry,"
said Ron stubbornly. Harry waited for the rest of the class to disappear, then headed nervously for Professor McGonagall's desk.
"Yes, Potter?"
Harry took a deep breath.
"Professor, my aunt and uncle, forgot to sign my form," he said.
Professor McGonagall looked over her square spectacles at him, but didn't say anything.
"So, do you think it would be all right? I mean, will it be okay if I go to Hogsmeade?"
Professor McGonagall looked down and began shuffling papers on her desk.
"I'm afraid not, Potter," she said. "You heard what I said. No form, no visiting the village. That's the rule." "But, Professor, my aunt and uncle, you know, they're muggles. They don't really understand about Hogwarts forms and stuff,"
Harry said, while Ron egged him on with vigorous nods.
"If you said I could go, but I don't say so,"
said Professor McGonagall, standing up and piling her papers neatly into a drawer.
"The form clearly states that the parent or guardian must give permission."
She turned to look at him with an odd expression on her face. Was it pity?
"I'm sorry, Potter, but that's my final word. You had better hurry, or you'll be late for your next lesson."
There was nothing to be done. Ron called Professor McGonagall a lot of names that greatly annoyed Hermione. Hermione assumed an all-for-the-best expression that made Ron even angrier, and Harry had to endure everyone in the class talking loudly and happily about what they were going to do first, once they got into Hogsmeade.
"There's always the feast," said Ron, in an effort to cheer Harry up. "You know, the Halloween feast in the evening."
"Yeah," said Harry gloomily. "Great." The Halloween feast was always good, but it would taste a lot better if he was coming to it after a day in Hogsmeade with everyone else. Nothing anyone said made him feel any better about being left behind. Dean Thomas, who was good with a quill, had offered to forge Uncle Vernon's signature on the form, but as Harry had already told Professor McGonagall he hadn't had it signed, that was no good. Ron half-heartedly suggested the invisibility cloak, but Hermione stamped on that one, reminding Ron what Dumbledore had told them about the Dementors being able to see through them. Percy had what were possibly the least helpful words of comfort.
"They make a fuss about Hogsmeade, but I assure you, Harry, it's not all it's cracked up to be," he said seriously. "All right, the sweet shop's rather good, but Zonko's joke shop's frankly dangerous, and yes, the Shrieking Shack's always worth a visit, but really, Harry, apart from that, you're not missing anything."
On Halloween morning, Harry awoke with the rest and went down to breakfast feeling thoroughly depressed, though doing his best to act normally.
"We'll bring you lots of sweets back from Honeydukes," said Hermione, looking desperately sorry for him.
"Yeah, loads," said Ron.
He and Hermione had finally forgotten their squabble about Crookshanks in the face of Harry's disappointment.
"Don't worry about me," said Harry, in what he hoped was an off-hand voice. "I'll see you at the feast. Have a good time."
He accompanied them to the entrance hall, where Filch, the caretaker, was standing inside the front doors, checking off names against a long list, peering suspiciously into every face, and making sure that no one was sneaking out who shouldn't be going.
"Staying here, Potter?" shouted Malfoy, who was standing in line with Crabbe and Goyle. "Scared of passing the Dementors?"
Harry ignored him and made his solitary way up the marble staircase, through the deserted corridors, and back to Gryffindor Tower.
"Password?"
said the fat lady, jerking out of a doze. "Fortuna Major," said Harry listlessly. The portrait swung open, and he climbed through the hole into the common room. It was full of chattering first and second years, and a few older students who had obviously visited Hogsmeade so often the novelty had worn off.
"Harry! Harry! Hi, Harry!"
It was Colin Creevy, a second year who was deeply in awe of Harry and never missed an opportunity to speak to him.
"Aren't you going to Hogsmeade, Harry? Why not? Hey!"
Colin looked eagerly around at his friends.
"You can come and sit with us if you like, Harry."
No thanks, Colin," said Harry, who wasn't in the mood to have a lot of people staring avidly at the scar on his forehead. I've got to go to the library, got to get some work done." After that, he had no choice but to turn right around and head back out of the portrait hole again.
"What was the point of waking me up?"
the fat lady called grumpily after him as he walked away. Harry wandered dispiritedly towards the library, but halfway there he changed his mind. He didn't feel like working. He turned around and came face to face with Filch, who had obviously just seen off the last of the Hogsmeade visitors.
"What are you doing?" Filch snarled suspiciously.
"Nothing," said Harry truthfully.
"Nothing!"
spat Filch, his jowls quivering unpleasantly.
"A likely story. Sneaking around on your own. Why aren't you in Hogsmeade buying stink pellets and belch powder and whizzing worms like the rest of your nasty little friends?"
Harry shrugged.
"Well, get back to your common room where you belong," snapped Filch,
and he stood glaring until Harry had passed out of sight. But Harry didn't go back to the common room. He climbed a staircase, thinking vaguely of visiting the owlery to see Hedwig, and was walking along another corridor when a voice from inside one of the rooms said,
"Harry?"
Harry doubled back to see who had spoken, and met Professor Lupin looking around his office door. "What are you doing?" said Lupin in a very different voice from Filch. "Where are Ron and Hermione?" "Hogsmeade," said Harry, in a would-be casual voice.
"Ah," said Lupin.
He considered Harry for a moment.
"Why don't you come in?
I've just taken delivery of a Grindelow for our next lesson."
"A what?"
said Harry. He followed Lupin into his office. In the corner stood a very large tank of water. A sickly green creature with sharp little horns had its face pressed against the glass, pulling faces and flexing its long, spindly fingers.
"Water demon,"
said Lupin, surveying the Grindelow thoughtfully.
"We shouldn't have much difficulty with him, not after the cappers. The trick is to break his grip. You notice the abnormally long fingers? Strong, but very brittle."
The Grindelow bared its green teeth and then buried itself in a tangle of weed in a corner.
"Cup of tea?" Lupin said, looking around for his kettle. "I was just thinking of making one."
"All right," said Harry awkwardly. Lupin tapped the kettle with his wand, and a blast of steam issued suddenly from the spout.
"Sit down,"
said Lupin, taking the lid off a dusty tin.
"I've only got tea bags, I'm afraid, but I dare say you've had enough of tea leaves."
Harry looked at him. Lupin's eyes were twinkling.
"How did you know about that?"
Harry asked.
"Professor McGonagall told me,"
said Lupin, passing Harry a chipped mug of tea.
"You're not worried, are you?"
"No," said Harry. He thought for a moment of telling Lupin about the dog he had seen in Magnolia Crescent, but decided not to. He didn't want Lupin to think he was a coward, especially since Lupin already seemed to think he couldn't cope with a boggart. Something of Harry's thoughts seemed to have shown on his face, because Lupin said,
"Anything worrying you, Harry?"
"No," Harry lied. He drank a bit of tea and watched the Grindelow brandishing a fist at him. "Yes," he said suddenly, putting his tea down on Lupin's desk.
"You know that day we fought the boggart?"
"Yes," said Lupin slowly.
"Why didn't you let me fight it?"
said Harry abruptly. Lupin raised his eyebrows.
"I would have thought that was obvious, Harry,"
he said, sounding surprised. Harry, who had expected Lupin to deny that he'd done any such thing, was taken aback.
"Why?"
he said again.
"Well," said Lupin, frowning slightly,
I assume that if the boggart faced you, it would assume the shape of Lord Voldemort. Harry stared. Not only was this the last answer he'd expected, but Lupin had said Voldemort's name. The only person Harry had ever heard say the name aloud, apart from himself, was Professor Dumbledore.
"Clearly I was wrong," said Lupin, still frowning at Harry. "But I didn't think it a good idea for Lord Voldemort to materialize in the staff room. I imagined that people would panic." "I did think of Voldemort first," said Harry, honestly. "But then I remembered those Dementors."
"I see," said Lupin thoughtfully.
Well, I'm impressed."
He smiled slightly at the look of surprise on Harry's face. "That suggests that what you fear most of all is fear.
Very wise, Harry."
Harry didn't know what to say to that, so he drank some more tea.
"So you've been thinking that I didn't believe you capable of fighting the boggart," said Lupin shrewdly.
"Well, yeah," said Harry. He was suddenly feeling a lot happier.
"Professor Lupin, you know the Dementors?"
He was interrupted by a knock on the door.
"Come in," called Lupin. The door opened, and in came Snape. He was carrying a goblet which was smoking faintly, and stopped at the sight of Harry, his black eyes narrowing.
"Ah, Severus," said Lupin, smiling. "Thanks very much. Could you leave it here on the desk for me?"
Snape set the smoking goblet down, his eyes wandering between Harry and Lupin.
"I was just showing Harry my Grindelow," said Lupin pleasantly, pointing at the tank.
"Fascinating," said Snape, without looking at it.
"You should drink that directly, Lupin."
"Yes, yes, I will," said Lupin.
"I made an entire cauldronful," Snape continued, "if you need more."
"I should probably take some again tomorrow. Thanks very much, Severus."
"Not at all," said Snape, but there was a look in his eye Harry didn't like. He backed out of the room, unsmiling and watchful. Harry looked curiously at the goblet. Lupin smiled.
"Professor Snape has very kindly concocted a potion for me," he said. "I have never been much of a potion brewer, and this one is particularly complex."
He picked up the goblet and sniffed it. "Pity sugar makes it useless," he added, taking a sip and shuddering.
"Why," Harry began.
Lupin looked at him and answered the unfinished question.
"I've been feeling a bit off colour," he said. "This potion is the only thing that helps. I am very lucky to be working alongside Professor Snape. There aren't many wizards who are up to making it."
Professor Lupin took another sip, and Harry had a mad urge to knock the goblet out of his hands.
"Professor Snape's very interested in the dark arts," he blurted out.
"Really?" said Lupin, looking only mildly interested as he took another gulp of potion.
"Some people reckon—" Harry hesitated, then plunged recklessly on. "Some people reckon he'd do anything to get the Defence Against the Dark Arts job."
Lupin drained the goblet and pulled a face.
"Disgusting," he said. "Well, Harry, I'd better get back to work. I'll see you at the feast later."
"Right," said Harry, putting his empty teacup down. The empty goblet was still smoking.
"There you go," said Ron. "We got as much as we could carry."
A shower of brilliantly coloured sweets fell into Harry's lap. It was dusk, and Ron and Hermione had just turned up in the common room, pink-faced from the cold wind, and looking as though they'd had the time of their lives.
"Thanks," said Harry, picking up a packet of tiny black pepper imps. "What's Hogsmeade like? Where did you go?"
By the sound of it, everywhere. Dervish and Bangs, the wizarding equipment shop, Zonko's joke shop, into the Three Broomsticks for foaming mugs of hot butter beer, and many places besides.
"The post office, Harry. About 200 owls, all sitting on shelves, all colour-coded, depending on how fast you want your letter to get there. Honeydukes have got a new kind of fudge. They were giving out free samples. There's a bit. Look. We think we saw an ogre. Honestly, they get all sorts at the Three Broomsticks. Wish we could have brought you some butter beer. Really warms you up."
"What did you do?" said Hermione, looking anxious. "Did you get any work done?" No, said Harry. Lupin made me a cup of tea in his office, and then Snape came in. He told them all about the goblet. Ron's mouth fell open.
Lupin drank it, he gasped. Is he mad?
Hermione checked her watch. We'd better go down, you know. The feast'll be starting in 5 minutes. They hurried through the portrait hole and into the crowd, still discussing Snape.
But if he, you know...
Hermione dropped her voice, glancing nervously around.
If he was trying to poison Lupin, he wouldn't have done it in front of Harry.
Yeah, maybe, said Harry, as they reached the entrance hall and crossed into the great hall. It had been decorated with hundreds and hundreds of candle-filled pumpkins, a cloud of fluttering live bats, and many flaming orange streamers, which were swimming lazily across the stormy ceiling like brilliant water snakes. The food was delicious. Even Hermione and Ron, who were full to bursting with Honeyduke sweets, managed second helpings of everything. Harry kept glancing at the staff table. Professor Lupin looked cheerful and as well as he ever did. He was talking animatedly to tiny little Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher. Harry moved his eyes along the table to the place where Snape sat. Was he imagining it, or were Snape's eyes flickering towards Lupin more often than was natural? The feast finished with an entertainment provided by the Hogwarts ghosts. They popped out of the walls and tables to do a spot of formation gliding. Nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, had a great success with a reenactment of his own botched beheading. It had been such a good evening that Harry's good mood couldn't even be spoiled by Malfoy, who shouted through the crowd as they all left the hall, "The Dementors send their love, Potter!" Harry, Ron, and Hermione followed the rest of the Gryffindors along the usual path to Gryffindor Tower. But when they reached the corridor, which ended with the portrait of the fat lady, they found it jammed with students.
"Why isn't anyone going in?" said Ron curiously.
Harry peered over the heads in front of him. The portrait seemed to be closed.
"Let me through, please," came Percy's voice, and he came bustling importantly through the crowd. "What's the hold-up here? You can't all have forgotten the password. Excuse me, I'm head boy."
And then a silence fell over the crowd, from the front first, so that a chill seemed to spread down the corridor. They heard Percy say, in a suddenly sharp voice,
"Somebody get Professor Dumbledore, quick!"
People's heads turned. Those at the back were standing on tiptoe.
"What's going on?"
said Ginny, who had just arrived. Next moment, Professor Dumbledore was there, sweeping towards the portrait. The Gryffindors squeezed together to let him through, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione moved closer to see what the trouble was.
"Oh, my!"
Hermione exclaimed, and grabbed Harry's arm. The fat lady had vanished from her portrait, which had been slashed so viciously that strips of canvas littered the floor. Great chunks of it had been torn away completely. Dumbledore took one quick look at the ruined painting and turned, his eyes sombre, to see Professors McGonagall, Lupin and Snape hurrying towards him.
"We need to find her," said Dumbledore.
"Professor McGonagall, please go to Mr. Filch at once and tell him to search every painting in the castle for the fat lady."
"You'll be lucky,"
said a cackling voice. It was Peeves, the poltergeist, bobbing over the crowd and looking delighted, as he always did at the sight of wreckage or worry.
"What do you mean, Peeves?" said Dumbledore calmly, and Peeves's grin faded a little. He didn't dare taunt Dumbledore. Instead, he adopted an oily voice that was no better than his cackle.
"Ashamed, your headship, sir. Doesn't want to be seen. She's a horrible mess. Saw her running through the landscape up on the fourth floor, sir, dodging between the trees, crying something dreadful," he said happily.
"Poor thing," he added unconvincingly.
"Did she say who did it?" said Dumbledore quietly.
"Oh, yes, Professor Head," said Peeves, with the air of one cradling a large bombshell in his arms. "He got very angry when she wouldn't let him in, you see."
Peeves flipped over and grinned at Dumbledore from between his own legs.
"Nasty temper he's got."
that Sirius Black.
Chapter 9. Grim Defeat. Professor Dumbledore sent all the Gryffindors back to the Great Hall, where they were joined 10 minutes later by the students from Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw and Slytherin, who all looked extremely confused.
"The teachers and I need to conduct a thorough search of the castle," Professor Dumbledore told them, as Professors McGonagall and Flitwick closed all doors into the hall. "I am afraid that for your own safety you will have to spend the night here. I want the prefects to stand guard over the entrances to the hall, and I am leaving the head boy and girl in charge. Any disturbance should be reported to me immediately," he added to Percy, who was looking immensely proud and important. "Send word with one of the ghosts."
Professor Dumbledore paused, about to leave the hall, and said,
"Oh, yes, you'll be needing—" One casual wave of his wand, and the long tables flew to the edges of the hall and stood themselves against the walls. Another wave, and the floor was covered with hundreds of squashy purple sleeping bags.
"Sleep well," said Professor Dumbledore, closing the door behind him. The hall immediately began to buzz excitedly. The Gryffindors were telling the rest of the school what had just happened.
"Everyone into their sleeping bags," shouted Percy. "Come on now, no more talking. Lights out in 10 minutes.
"Come on," Ron said to Harry and Hermione.
They seized 3 sleeping bags and dragged them into a corner.
"Do you think Black's still in the castle?"
Hermione whispered anxiously.
"Dumbledore obviously thinks he might be," said Ron. "It's very lucky he picked tonight, you know," said Hermione, as they climbed fully dressed into their sleeping bags and propped themselves on their elbows to talk. "The one night we weren't in the tower."
"I reckon he's lost track of time, being on the run," said Ron. "Didn't realize it was Halloween, otherwise he'd have come bursting in here." Hermione shuddered. All around them, people were asking each other the same question. How did he get in?
"Maybe he knows how to apparate," said a Ravenclaw a few feet away. "Just appear out of thin air, you know."
"Disguised himself, probably," said a Hufflepuff fifth year.
"He could have flown in," suggested Dean Thomas.
"Honestly, am I the only person who's ever bothered to read Hogwarts a History?" said Hermione crossly to Harry and Ron.
"Probably," said Ron. "Why?"
"Because the castle's protected by more than walls, you know," said Hermione. "There are all sorts of enchantments on it to stop people entering by stealth. You can't just apparate in here. And I'd like to see the disguise that could fool those Dementors. They're guarding every single entrance to the grounds. They'd have seen him fly in, too, and Filch knows all the secret passages. They'll have them covered."
"The lights are going out now," Percy shouted. "I want everyone in their sleeping bags and no more talking."
The candles all went out at once. The only light now came from the silvery ghosts, who were drifting about talking seriously to the prefects, and the enchanted ceiling, which, like the sky outside, was scattered with stars. What with that and the whispering that still filled the hall, Harry felt as though he was sleeping out of doors in a light wind. Once every hour, a teacher would reappear in the hall to check that everything was quiet. Around 3 in the morning, when many students had finally fallen asleep, Professor Dumbledore came in. Harry watched him looking around for Percy, who had been prowling between the sleeping bags, telling people off for talking. Percy was only a short way away from Harry, Ron and Hermione, who quickly pretended to be asleep as Dumbledore's footsteps drew nearer.
"Any sign of him, Professor?" asked Percy in a whisper.
"No.
All well here?"
"Everything under control, sir."
"Good. There's no point moving them all now. I've found a temporary guardian for the Gryffindor portrait hole. You'll be able to move them back in tomorrow."
"And the fat lady, sir?"
"Hiding in a map of Argyleshire on the 2nd floor. Apparently she refused to let Black in without the password, so he attacked. She's still very distressed, but once she's calmed down, I'll have Mr. Filch restore her."
Harry heard the door of the hall creak open again, and more footsteps.
"Headmaster?"
It was Snape. Harry kept quite still, listening hard.
The whole of the third floor has been searched. He's not there. And Filch has done the dungeons. Nothing there, either. And what about the astronomy tower, Professor Trelawney's room, the owlery? All searched. Very well, Severus. I didn't really expect Black to linger. Have you any theory as to how he got in, Professor? Asked Snape. Harry raised his head very slightly off his arms to free his other ear. Many, Severus, each of them as unlikely as the next. Harry opened his eyes a fraction and squinted up to where they stood. Dumbledore's back was to him, but he could see Percy's face, rapt with attention, and Snape's profile, which looked angry.
You remember the conversation we had, Headmaster, just before the start of term? Said Snape, who was barely opening his lips, as though trying to block Percy out of the conversation. "'I do, Severus,' said Dumbledore, and there was something like warning in his voice. "'It seems almost impossible that Black could have entered the school without inside help. I did express my concerns when you appointed—'
"'I do not believe a single person inside this castle would have helped Black enter it.' said Dumbledore, and his tone made it so clear that the subject was closed that Snape didn't reply.
"'I must go down to the Dementors,' said Dumbledore. "'I said I would inform them when our search was complete.'
"'Didn't they want to help, sir?' said Percy.
"'Oh, yes,' said Dumbledore, coldly. "'But I'm afraid no Dementor will cross the threshold of this castle while I am headmaster.'
Percy looked slightly abashed. Dumbledore left the hall, walking quickly and quietly. Snape stood for a moment, watching the headmaster with an expression of deep resentment on his face. Then he, too, left. Harry glanced sideways at Ron and Hermione. Both of them had their eyes open, too, reflecting the starry ceiling.
"'What was all that about?'
Ron mouthed.